As we said, we're going to consider verses 5 to 20, these five woes that the Lord pronounced against Babylon. In verse 6 we read, "Shall not all these take up a parable against him, and the taunting proverb against him, and say, Woe to him that increaseth that which is not his, how long? And to him that ladeth himself with thick clay." Keith Oaks was a travelling salesman from St. Louis in America. He was married not to one woman, but to two women at exactly the same time. He had a home with one wife in the east of St. Louis, and he had a home with the other wife in the west of St. Louis. He managed to be a polygamist for 18 years. The way he was able to get away with it was because he was a traveling salesman, and so he said to both wives, he was on the road quite a while and for quite a long time, and so he was able to pull it off that way. But on one occasion, Keith Oaks was to learn the principle, be sure your sin will find you out. Whenever both of his wives got sick at the same time, what happened was they got sick and they both ended up in the city in Barnes Hospital in St. Louis at exactly the same time. The first few days, Keith pulled it off. He would go to one ward. He would visit one sick wife. He would then come out of the ward. He would get in the elevator. He'd go up a next floor and he would visit the other sick wife in her ward. But after a few days, Keith got fed up with this arrangement. It was too much for him, and he didn't show up to visit either wife. One wife got very angry. She said to him, "Keith, you weren't there when I needed you. Get out of my life." He tried his best to console this wife, but she couldn't be consoled. Keith thought to himself, "Well, I've dodged a bullet, as it were. I'll just go to my other wife. I'll tell her nothing about this, and I've got away with it." And so this continued on. He went home. The next day then he came back to the hospital, and the other wife that he went to, she was now well enough to go home. He gathered up her things. He followed the nurse who was pushing his wife in a wheelchair to the lift. Just then, as he was about to get into the lift, his other wife that he had fallen out with the previous day, she saw him and she said, "Keith, honey, I'm sorry. Please take me home." Of course, he then saw the woman he was with. And of course, then Keith Oaks, he learned the lesson that although the wheels of God's justice grind slowly, they do grind surely. And that sin will eventually catch up with us all. You know, this truth, I believe, would have encouraged Habakkuk greatly. This truth that our sin will most definitely find us out. That's essentially what God is saying in these five woes in Habakkuk chapter 2. You remember the journey that we've been on in our studies in Habakkuk. In chapter 1, we saw his faith wavering. He was asking questions. Questions like, "Lord, how long are you not going to answer my prayers? Lord, how long are the righteous, are the wicked going to win? Lord, I don't know what you're doing. Lord, do you know what you're doing?" But now, the question is not, "Lord, what are you doing?" but, "Lord, when will you do it?" Because in chapter 2, as we saw last week, Habakkuk's faith, it progressed from faith wavering to faith watching. Last week we saw Habakkuk. He was armed with the promise of God that God would come, that God would judge the Babylonians. And in chapter 2, we saw him up in a watchtower waiting for God to send the Babylonians and waiting then for him to come and judge them. And essentially, throughout the rest of chapter 2, he is enlarging upon the certainty of verse number 3. Remember, one of the problems that Habakkuk struggled with was why? Why would God punish a declining Judah by an even worse nation, Babylon, a downright depraved, dark nation? But God then comes to Habakkuk, and in these verses, through these woes that he pronounces on Babylon, he's essentially saying this: "Look, Habakkuk, I am holy. I am just. I am faithful." And Habakkuk although I might not just punish them tomorrow or the next day, I will eventually punish Babylon, just as I would raise them up to judge my people Judah, so I would also set them down again. I am going to punish them for their sin. And although the wicked may prosper, they will eventually be punished. God will eventually execute His justice upon the unrighteous. You look out at the world tonight and you see a world just like the day in which Habakkuk lived. It seems as if the wicked are winning. It seems as if the rich, they're getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. It seems that there is so much injustice in society. And because God doesn't come and judge them instantly, sometimes we tend to think, Lord, do you know what you're doing? Lord, are you in control? Lord, are you really holy? Are you really just? And if you are, why are the wicked winning? But the Lord is coming to us tonight and showing us this, that He is still in the throne, that He will remember His own, that He is holy, and He will eventually punish the unjust, the unrighteous, the wicked. And although it might be delayed, as He stated in verse 3 to Habakkuk, it is for an appointed time. In other words, there will be an appointed time when I will come, when I will give the wicked, when I will give the unrighteous, when I will give the ungodly exactly what they deserve. My just judgment. And He's enlarging upon this in chapter 2. It's a difficult chapter. I give it to you. It's a very difficult chapter. But when you break it down to these five woes, that's essentially what the Lord is doing here. And I believe that these would have been welcome woes to Habakkuk. Although God is stating He's going to punish Babylon, it would have been welcome to Habakkuk. Remember how chapter 1 he stated that God was holy, that God was just, He was of purer eyes than to behold iniquity. God is coming to him and saying, yes, Habakkuk, that's exactly what I'm like. And as God pronounced these woes upon Babylon, that would have showed Habakkuk that God is right, that God will keep His promise, that He will eventually punish the unrighteous. And so tonight, with the help of the Lord, I want to consider Habakkuk's welcome woes. I want to just simply go through these five woes that God pronounced upon Babylon and take the principles from them. The first woe that God pronounced in Babylon was the woe of ill-gotten increase, or the woe upon ill-gotten increase. Verse 6 we read, woe to him that increaseth that which is not his, how long? And to him that ladeth himself with thick clay. Verse 5 stated that the Babylonians, they could not be satisfied. The Babylonians, they were known for their lust for stuff, for money, for possessions. Whether it was people, whether it was property, whether it was places, possessions. It seems that they were a nation that were bent on building as big an empire as was imaginable. What Babylon would do was this. They would go to a country. They would go to a town, they would go to a village, and they would ransack that area, and they would take the spoils of war all for themselves. Through this, they actually became the world's greatest superpower of its day. But this was ill-gotten gain, because they had gotten their gain the wrong way. We read it, verse 6, woe to him that increaseth that which is not his. In other words, they were transgressing the commandment. They were going to villages, going to towns. They were taking that which was not theirs. It was ill-gotten gain. And remember the image of verse 6. We looked at it last week, but we'll look at it again just now. Verse 6, ladeth himself with thick clay. Habakkuk, or the Lord comes to Habakkuk. He states that what were this nation doing? They were getting themselves in debt, as it were. They were like an individual, and they were storing up great debts. They were taking these things that didn't belong to them, and it was as if they were laden down with thick clay. These debts were getting very heavy and heavier, and it was as if they were carrying them about like clay. And although they were increasing and getting gain which was ill-gotten, he actually states they were in debt to him. Then in verse 7, he proceeds to show Habakkuk how he would punish them. He uses the picture of the debt collector. He states there, "Shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee and awake that shall vex thee?" He was essentially saying this. One day, the clay's going to get too heavy. One day, they're going to take too much, and I'm going to come, and I'm going to be like a debt collector and square my debts. And he uses a very, very interesting image. He states there, "Shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee?" The word "bite" there, as I'm sure you can imagine, it refers to a venomous snake. And he states that the way he was going to come and judge them and punish them, it would just be like a venomous snake. The venomous snake would rise up. It would bite them. He also states, "And awake that shall vex thee." And this word "vex" is a very picturesque word in the Hebrew. It carries the idea of a man coming to another man and literally lifting him up by the shoes and shaking that man from top to bottom, waiting for coins to drop from him. And the Lord is simply saying this. This is what I'm going to do to Babylon. I'm going to come as a debt collector. I'm going to bite them like a poisonous snake. And I'm going to lift them up and I'm going to shake them for everything that they have taken unjustly from others. I'm going to shake them until the last penny would fall. And he was stating this, although they appear wealthy now, the time is coming. The time is coming, Habakkuk, when I'm going to come and I'm going to square their debts. I'm going to remove that which was not gained honestly. And as well as not being any man's debtor, the Lord is every man's creditor. And one day, he will surely square his accounts. You look at the wicked tonight, you look at especially those who are increasing in prosperity and profit and progress, all through ill-gotten gain, and you ask yourself the question, is God doing anything about it? Does God see it? Does God really know what he's doing? Is God still on the throne? Well, Lord's reminding you tonight this, that one day there's going to be a day come, and it might be in this life, and if not, it's going to surely be in the next, and I'm going to lift them, and I'm going to shake them for every last penny that they have taken, and he is going to come and settle his accounts sooner or later. Of course, as the Lord's people, we shouldn't distance ourselves from this. What does it remind you? It reminds you that whenever you are dealing in financial matters, that you are to be straight, that you are to not deal underhandedly, that ultimately God will not prosper the business or the businessman who conducts his business in an underhand manner. Sometimes there's the tendency to think that we'll cut a corner here and we'll get away with that there. We'll turn a blind eye to that. But the Lord's reminding you this, that he is the great creditor, and he will settle his accounts. And you're to be faithful. You're to be faithful with that which the Lord has entrusted you. You know, there was an atheist farmer. He often ridiculed people who believed in God. In fact, he was so irate and so strong in his atheism, he wrote a letter to the local newspaper. He stated this. He stated, "I ploughed on Sunday. I planted on Sunday. I cultivated on Sunday. I watered on Sunday. I harvested on Sunday. But I never darkened the door of a church on Sunday. But I harvested more per acre than anybody else. Even those God-fearing that never miss a service." The editor himself was a believer in God. And after publishing that, he published it with his own footnote. God doesn't always settle his accounts in October. And although God may be a slow creditor, he is a sure creditor. And he may not settle his accounts when you would perhaps like him to, or when you even think he should. But remember, God will settle his accounts in his appointed time. And he's stating to Habakkuk, "Habakkuk, you're going to see Babylon. You're going to see them grow and grow through ill-gotten gain. But it's for an appointed time, Habakkuk. Because I'm going to come and I'm going to square every last single debt that has been accrued before me. So there was the woe upon their ill-gotten gain. I want you to see secondly here that there was a woe upon their inhumanity. Inhumanity. Verse 9, we read, woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. God states to Habakkuk that the first thing he was going to punish Babylon for was taking money for personal gain. And he states here in verse 9, the second thing he's going to do is he's going to punish them for using people for personal gain. The phrase covetous, an evil covetousness, it means literally to gain an unjust gain. You're probably asking the question, well, if these individuals, they're taking all of this money that doesn't belong to them, well, how are they doing it? How are they going to cities and to towns and simply taking that which doesn't belong to them? Well, really, they were unfair to humanity. They were coming to people, they were taking that which didn't belong to them, and they were ill-treating them in an inhuman way. They were using them in order to receive gain. Verse 9 describes them, that he might set his nest on high. The picture is of the eagle, setting its nest way high in the mountains, up on a cliffside somewhere. And really the thought is this, the Babylonians, they're coming along, they're taking, they're increasing, and they're trampling people under feet. And they feel that they're untouchable. They feel that as they build their nest, as it were, that it's so high that no one will come and no one will disturb it. That they could get away with it, they could do what they wanted when they wanted. Verse 10, we even read, concerning Nebuchadnezzar, thou hast consulted shame to thy house by cutting off many people. And the Lord, he's pronouncing a woe here, particularly upon Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. What Nebuchadnezzar did, historically speaking, he was known for taking all of the plunder, much of the plundered remains of conquered cities, and building his house with that remain, or with those remains. God stating here to the Babylonians and to Nebuchadnezzar, you think you're like the eagle? That you're high in the sky, that no one can touch you, that you'll get away with it forever. But woe upon your inhumanity to fellow man. And then in verse 11, he comes with a picture of an unstable house. And he essentially states, Nebuchadnezzar, you think you're untouchable. You think your house is impregnable. You think that you're unreachable. I'm going to come and I'm going to shake that house. I'm going to ensure that it is unstable and eventually it will collapse all around you. You see, inhumanity before God eventually brings the indignation of God. It will bring His wrath. You look around tonight and you see ill-gotten gain. The rich, they're getting richer, and sometimes it's through trampling people underfoot. You know that mentality? I'm going to get to the very top, and I don't care who I trample under, as long as I get there, as long as it suits me. You see, individuals use others for personal gain, and they think that they're untouchable. But God is showing you again that He's going to come, and He's going to shake up their life. And again, it may be in this life, and it may be in the next. But oh, how unstable it all is. One day He will come, He will shake their house, He will shake their life, and He will deal with them again for their inhumanity. Of course, the Bible tells us very clearly that we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. We're to love everyone else, friend, foe, family, everybody else in this world. We're to love them with the love that we have for ourselves, and when we don't, it's a sin. You see, God has always and He will always detest the sin of humanity. And the oppression of the oppressor will eventually experience the retribution of the Redeemer. those who oppress, those who come, those who trample individuals under their foot. The Lord's going to come one day, and he's going to trample them under his foot. Is that not what the Psalms teach us? That all things are under his feet. Psalm 110. All things are under his footstool. Oh, the Lord. He's showing Habakkuk. He's showing you tonight that I'm going to deal with. I'm going to judge with all of the humanity in society. He was pronouncing a woe upon their ill-gotten gain and their inhumanity, but also their industry. Verses 12 and 13. Woe to him that buildeth a town with blood, and establisheth a city by iniquity. Behold, it is not of the Lord of hosts that the people shall labor in the very fire, and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity. The city of Babylon was a magnificent place. Historians tell us that it was 15 square miles. It had 350-foot high walls. These walls were 87 feet thick. Historians tell us that there were 6 chariots at any one time could comfortably ride side by side on these walls. Within the city, there were 250 watchtowers. There were 53 temples. But verse 12 tells us that all of this had been built by blood and built by cruelty. You see, when individuals or nations were taken captive, they would then be used to build up this great empire that was Great Babylon. They were slaying innocent nations. They were slaying and using and captivating innocent Jews. And all just so that Babylon could boast. But what does the Lord state? He states here in verse 13, and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity. In other words, he's saying this. They're laboring to build this magnificent city, this magnificent empire, and it's all vanity. It's all empty. That's what vanity means in the Hebrew. It means empty. Just like a breath, just like a cloud or a puff of smoke. There is no substance to it. And the Lord then tells us what he was going to do with Babylon and with the nation. Verse 13, the people shall labor in the very fire. And one day again, he was showing Habakkuk. I trust you're starting to see the pattern here. He's showing Habakkuk again. He was going to judge them for this industry that really was of no use to him whatsoever. That was vain, that was empty. And he was saying it was all going to go up in smoke. The Babylonians, the great empire, that great city, they were laboring in the fire. It was all one day going to go up in smoke. And God was showing Habakkuk that he was going to visit them for their vain industry. Purposeless industry leads to eventual incineration. One day, all vain efforts and labor will be burned up in the fire of God. God was stating to Habakkuk, yes, they're going to build a city, they're going to build a kingdom, but eventually I will burn it. It will go up in smoke. And what a lesson. You can apply that in so many aspects of life. You think of the individual. Think of the individual we've been thinking about already. Those that trample others underfoot, those who want to get as high up in society as possible, those who want to amass riches, and amass riches. What does the Lord say? It's all vanity. It's all vain. It's all empty. And it's all going to go up in smoke. It's all worthless before me. And someday it is going to be judged. You think of the sinner who tries to vainly work his way to heaven. The Lord is telling us this, that one day all of his vain efforts, his vain works, the vain efforts of building and building and working to the very point even of exhaustion. Again, it is all going to go up in smoke. You also think of yourself. 1 Corinthians 3 states, tells us there that the believer's works are going to be tried by fire. And that which remains, if it has been for the Lord, if it has been service for him, it'll be like gold, it'll be like silver, it'll be like a precious stone. But then there will be other labors. And because we've been doing them for ourselves, building our own empires, seeking to advance our own kingdom, what does the Lord state? It's going to be burned up. Just like wood. Just like hay. Just like stubble. How challenging. That even your works, believer, they will be tried by a fire. There was a forgetful professor, and he became so absorbed in his work that he would often forget just the simplest of details. One morning his wife said to him, "Henry, remember that you're going to work today, you're going to teach, but when you come home, we're going to move house, and we're going to start now, so remember this. And I'm writing it down. I'm putting it on a note, and I'm going to put this note in your pocket. Henry, don't forget that when we come back, we'll move house." The day passed by, and the man came home. He entered the front door, saw everything had gone, saw his wife was gone, saw his children was gone, saw all of his furniture had disappeared. And he had forgotten what it was all about. Distraught, he sat down on the curb, and he began to sob. Young boy walked up to him and said, and he said to the little boy, do you know the people who used to live here? The little boy smiled and he said, sure, Dad. Mum sent me to just ensure that you didn't forget. And child of God, don't forget who you are. Don't forget where you've come from. And don't forget ultimately where you're going and what you're laboring for. Because the Lord states that all of the vain work, it's going to go up in smoke. All of the labors of advancing self and advancing our own empires, our own kingdom, even in the service of God, it's all going to be tried by fire. It'll go up in smoke if it's not been for Him. There was a woe upon their ill-gotten gain, their inhumanity, their industry. There was a woe upon their intoxication. Verse 15, we read, woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, that puttest thy bottle to him, and makest him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. Isn't it very interesting that the first thing that caught God's eye in verse 5, that he punished Babylon for, was alcohol. He pronounces a woe upon them, or he deals with them who transgress by wine. You see, the Babylonians were a people that loved wine. They were a people that loved drunkenness. And when they were controlled by wine and dominated by wine, they then gave themselves to the things that we have been considering. It was whenever they were drunken that they were then found pilfering cities and plundering towns and advancing their own kingdoms through ill-gotten gain. But this drunkenness, this revel living, it had terrible results. They would give wine to each other. Verse 15 speaks of giving his neighbor drink and putting their bottle to them. And whenever they would cause each other to get drunk, it would lead to all sorts of shame. The Lord states, woe, woe to him that makes him drunk also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. It led to all sorts of immoral debauchery before the Lord. And Daniel 5 is actually a fulfillment of this prophecy. You remember Belshazzar? Belshazzar has the bottle of wine in one hand, and there is all sorts of debauchery going on around him. What does the Lord come? What does the Lord do? He comes to him and he writes to him on the wall, and he reminds him that thou art weighed in the balances and found wanting. And God stated to those who drink the cup of wine would eventually drink of the cup of his wrath. When wine dominates, wine eventually destroys. Wine wrecks and ruins lives. I don't have to enlarge upon this evening, but I will emphasize that alcohol ruins lives. You see the Babylonians, and they're advancing and they're prospering, and they're treating individuals as if they were absolute animals, all fueled by alcohol, all fueled by drink. We only have to look at society today to see it's exactly the same. All of a lot of the ill-gotten gain and many of the problems in society, and it is all through drink. Alcohol is a great scourge upon Christendom and society. And as the Lord shows Habakkuk, what does it do? It lowers an individual's inhibitions and it makes them do things they wouldn't normally do. God states he would visit them. He would visit them for being fueled by alcohol. There's another woe, and I'll just mention it in passing. He then pronounces a woe upon their idolatry. Verse 19, woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. God pronounces his final woe upon Babylon for their idolatry, their false religion. The Babylonian religion was a false religion and a godless religion. What would they do? Well, they would literally manufacture gods out of wood, out of stone, with their bare hands. And it seems that in verse 19, reading it, they would say to that God, awake. In other words, speak to us. Teach us. They would literally come to a piece of wood, to a piece of stone, and say, come, teach us, instruct us more about the things of God. And God pronounces a woe upon it. And he's stating here, look, Habakkuk, I see their drunkenness. I see their idolatry. I see all of their ill-gotten gain. I see their inhumanity. And I'm going to judge it. I am going to pronounce judgment upon them. I will eventually deal with them. And as well as judging intoxication, God denounces idolatry. And child of God, we need to even be so careful of this ourselves this evening. Because we can rightly look at those in far-off countries and they do this, they erect their gods of wood and their gods of stone and they say, instruct us and teach us. But how often are we not guilty of the same? We erect our own gods. We say, teach us. We say, instruct us. Well, we ask things to teach us and to lead us on. All the while, we should be coming to the Lord with the same attitude. But you know, the Lord sums all of this up in verse 20. And he states this to Habakkuk. Verse 20, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And after pronouncing these five woes upon the nation of Babylon, he's stating this, Habakkuk, I'm in control. God's still on the throne. He will remember his own. I'm in my temple. And the earth's going to keep silence before me. That word silence there, it's interesting. It means to hush. Means to be still. Caleb used this word in Numbers when he came before Moses. And we read there that he stilled the people before Moses. The Lord saying to Habakkuk, be still. Be still, Habakkuk. You watch me work. You watch me, I'm in control. It's actually from the same family of Psalm 46. Be still and know that I am God. That's really what the Lord's saying to Habakkuk here. After all of these woes, Habakkuk, just sit back. I'm in my temple. I'm in control. Keep silence. Be still. Keep your eye on me. Look up. I will eventually come and I will judge the wicked nation of Babylon. Habakkuk's welcome woes. May the Lord bless these words to your hearts and lives.